Last time we were talking about the Nephilim from the Bible, and we're going to continue that discussion today on another episode of Study, Grow, Know.
Welcome to Study, Grow, Know, where we discuss theology, prophecy, and current political issues from a conservative biblical perspective. Here's your host, Dr. Fred DeRuvo.
As I mentioned earlier, both Peter and Jude from the Bible quote or refer to the book of Enoch, and they refer to this particular event that I talked about last time, in which the Nephilim were the result of fallen angels somehow finding a way to procreate with human women. I don't know how. The Bible doesn't explain how. We do know that angels, fallen or otherwise, can take on physical form. They can touch things. They can eat. They can do all kinds of things. So we don't really know, and we don't need to know. But somehow, according to Genesis 6, we know that Nephilim resulted from the mighty men of old. And some believe that that has to do with the fallen angels. It's obviously an issue that is peripheral to salvation. If you don't think that's the case, that actual angels procreated, that's fine. It doesn't matter. It's just that I'm kind of explaining it from that perspective because I think it makes a whole lot of sense. Do I live and die by this? No. I live and die by the five fundamentals of the faith, including, of course, salvation. Well, anyway, those particular fallen angels who participated in impregnating women so that Nephilim were born were ultimately chained at that time into the areas of utter darkness until the final day of judgment. Jude 1:6 tells us, "And the angels which kept not their first estate, but left their own habitation, he hath reserved in everlasting chains under darkness unto the judgment of the great day." Now, some also believe that that simply means the angels that fell from heaven. That's also possible. It also could mean that those angels who kept not that first estate, but left their own habitation and found a way to procreate and mingle with human beings could also be the case. If we take it the first way, that those angels who left their first estate have been reserved in everlasting chains, then that would mean that no fallen angels at all, including demons, would be around to harass Christians, because they'd all be chained up if that referred to all the angels who simply fell from heaven. So I don't think it can mean that. I think it has a more nuanced meaning. But let's continue. Again, in Jude 1:14 through 16, we read the following words, quote, "Enoch, the seventh from Adam, prophesied about them. He said, see, the Lord is coming with thousands upon thousands of his holy ones to judge everyone and to convict all of them of all the ungodly acts they have committed in their ungodliness and of all the defiant words ungodly sinners have spoken against him. These people are grumblers and fault finders. They follow their own evil desires. They boast about themselves and flatter others for their own advantage." They flatter others for their own advantage. Interesting. That's what a con artist does. Well, I believe these passages reference the fact that angels left their first estate. Now, as I mentioned, commentators and scholars disagree over that actual meaning. Does it mean the angels simply left heaven and fell to earth? Or does it mean that the angels who were given a specific command to be on the earth, as Enoch tells us, watch over and protect humanity, actually wound up going way beyond their angelic bounds by lusting after and finding a way to mate with human women? Was it the fact that angels fell through sin, or was it the fact that they somehow found a way to cohabit with human beings, or was it both? Well, the fact that Genesis 6 tells us that the Nephilim and the giants that resulted from the union of sons of God with daughters of men, it seems to indicate that angels, sons of God, and as also used, by the way, in the book of Job, found a way to procreate with women. And the result was the Nephilim, half-breed offspring that had so changed God's natural creative order into something monstrous that God was forced to banish these angels to darkness in chains until their final judgment. Now, Peter mentioned this. He mentions this in his second letter. He says, God spared not the angels that sinned, but cast them down to hell and delivered them into chains of darkness to be reserved unto judgment. 2 Peter 2:4. These are the same angels that Jude refers to here. They did something so terrible that God banished them and confined them to chains until their particular judgment day. And again, if these verses referenced all fallen angels, then they would all be in everlasting chains of darkness, held there until the day of judgment. God created everything, and each animal or human at the time of his creation procreated after their own kind. You can read about that in Genesis 1 through 2. And everything was good. It was deemed good by God. Now, some angels came along and threw a monkey wrench into the works by going after things that were not of their kind. That's important for us to note. The resultant offspring was neither fully angelic or fully human. It was a cross between the two, and it was something that God would not have said was good. It was a terrible monstrosity that was created by fallen angels. Satan is the most evil of all beings. If we consider the things that he has prompted people throughout this world, throughout history, to do, we see that evil from him is on display from the beginning. He was the first murderer, confer John 8:44, causing Cain to murder Abel. Satan has worked to create chaos, envy, jealousy, pride, greed, all the things that are found in him and the very things that brought about the fall, his fall, and ultimately the fall of humanity. Satan works tirelessly to bring the final man of sin, 2 Thessalonians 2, to the forefront of humankind's preordained destiny. He will find a way to completely indwell this individual and possibly even incarnate him so that the thoughts and ideals of Satan will be firmly embedded and enmeshed within the man of sin, and he will also mirror or reflect to those who really don't know some of the same types of prophecies that apply directly to Christ. Now, just as the Christian's destiny is to become more like Christ in character, so will this coming man of sin be so like his father Satan that the two will be indistinguishable for all intents and purposes. Now, Satan's goal from the beginning, as we know, has been to overthrow God. He has wanted to make God obsolete, replacing God with himself, Satan, a created being that is finite, whereas, of course, God is infinite. Now, the ridiculousness of the equation is something that most can see, certainly within Christendom, yet Satan barrels onward, seemingly oblivious to the asinine nature of his own quest. The most tragic part of the entire thing is that he has managed to trap and indoctrinate so many people into his web of lies and deceit. They are fully unable to see that they are caught up in his deceptions and consider themselves to be free-thinking individuals who use their freedom to remain free. Unfortunately, as will inevitably be shown to them once they die, hopefully before that, their freedom is only imaginary. Satan wants one thing, and one thing only. He wants to be God. But the very idea that someone can become something they were not created to be is absurd to human beings, at least on the face of it. If a person is not, for instance, born of, let's say, royal blood, they cannot all of a sudden become royalty unless they marry into that line. Now, in that case, they have become royal, not because of themselves, but only because of the individual with whom they are thoroughly connected. Without that connection, they cease to have any connection to royalty. They themselves are still not royalty, but are merely treated as such due to the person they are connected with. So in essence, this is the way it is for authentic Christians too. We become brothers and sisters of Jesus Christ through his redemptive mission when he came to this earth the first time. It is through our union with him, through faith, receiving his free gift, that we are then seen as God's sons and daughters, literally being adopted into God's family. You take Jesus from the picture and we remain fallen human beings, incapable of saving ourselves from anything. Now, this is the lie that Satan tells his followers. He says, stick with me and you will become gods. Against all logic, people believe and adopt this attitude, clinging to one who is as finite as they, though of course more powerful and a great deal wiser, more intelligent, more conniving. A finite human being associated with a finite fallen angel still equals being finite. Only in being connected to the infinite God of the universe and beyond, literally, does finite become eternal. And that is only done through faith in the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus Christ. And you can read about that in Romans 10, 11 through 13. Satan is on a path of complete, utter, and eternal destruction for himself and for those who follow him. That path will never change. Regardless of what he says to those who place their trust in him, Satan's appointed future lies in the lake of fire, and you can read about that toward the end of Revelation. For all eternity, those who follow him, believing that they will somehow receive a greater and better reward than their God, Satan, will come to realize that they have been the victim of the greatest con ever perpetrated on humanity. Are you one of them? Well, I pray you're not. Now, regarding the Nephilim, as stated, though the original bodies of the Nephilim died in the flood, and remember, the Nephilim are the offspring of the fallen angel and human union, so their bodies would have died in the flood like everything else, like everyone else, yet they remain with us. These, together with the fallen angels and Satan himself, are doing their best to guide this world towards Satan's intended agenda. He desperately wants to fulfill his goals. And the most obvious place that this is coming together is in the area of religion. Now, we have attempted, I've attempted, in my book, Alienology, and in this series, to bring all these various components together, and yet it's really impossible to do in one short series or even one book. What caters to one person may be lost on another. Satan knows this, of course, and is quite content to provide the opening that caters to each person. Whatever religion a person is, maybe the New Age movement will be able to suck them in. If they're not into either of those, then, well, maybe there's something within the field of humanism that will tempt their spirit. And for those who believe that neither the New Age thought nor humanism is something that they think about or are moved by, there are plenty of other avenues. Things like death metal or black metal music is one that has really tapped the minds of young people today. In fact, much of it, as I've mentioned in previous books, is wholly satanic, leaving nothing to the imagination. Many of these songs are literally prayers and odes to Satan to put music, if you can call that music, you know, lyrics to music. And this is continuing. You know, people have rightly pointed out that focusing on individual aspects of what Satan is attempting to accomplish causes us to miss the mother of all harlots, Revelation 17:5. And this harlot is a conglomeration of all that is opposed to God in any form. And we're going to talk about that more next time. So I thank you for joining me. I pray that you will, that God will open your eyes to show you how blessed you are.
You've been listening to Study, Grow, Know with Dr. Fred DeRuvo. Please join us each week for new broadcasts that deal with theology, prophecy, and political issues from a biblical, conservative perspective.